Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. On today's show, I'm hosting Chief Content Officer of Hearst Magazine's Joanna Coles to talk about her new book, Love Rules, How to Find a Real Relationship in a Digital World. Basically, a diet book for love. Topics include how to have more fun while dating rather than looking for the one, why we can't seem to admit to ourselves that we want love or what we need during sex. When it comes to dating, it's more about the stage than the age, and how to use dating apps as a way to actually find love and not just another date. All this and more. Thanks for listening. I just got my hands on the new Enchanted collection by Sportsheets, and I couldn't take them off. The whole collection is just so sexy and soft. They use this rich burgundy color and velvety and soft materials that just screams, touch me, feel me, spank me. At least that's what it said to me. It's amazing that something as simple as a blindfold or a furry paddle can easily enhance the intimate connection between you and your partner. Sportsheets is really passionate about keeping couples connected by adding a little adventure to your routine. And this new collection is the perfect way to start. There's even a beginner's kit with soft cuffs and a blindfold. But you want to know what's most surprising about all these new products? The price. Everything is super affordable, so you can explore on a budget. To start your intimate adventure, check out the entire Enchanted collection at sportsheets.com/Emily or click on the Sportsheets banner on my site.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily. You got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's got to have her standards. Oh, my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God. I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, go to sexwithemily.com because it's a party there. You guys, we upload every day with new podcasts, new stories, blog posts, everything that's going to help you have better sex and relationships. I love when you subscribe and comment on iTunes. It really helps us with the show, and I read all of your comments. I really do. And also, sign up for our newsletter because it's awesome. I know that you've told me, Emily, you give great email, and I feel really good about that. And no one's ever said to me, you were wrong. I was bummed I signed up for your newsletter. So please do that. We appreciate it. Join me on social media, you guys, across the board. It's all at Sex with Emily. I'm very excited for my guest today. I have Joanna Coles, and she's the Chief Content Officer of Hearst Magazines, which basically means that she controls the content for all the magazines that you basically know, love, and read. So Cosmo, Marie, which used to run Cosmo Magazine, and Marie Claire, and now Men's Health, Women's Health, right? Owners of that.
Yep, Harper's Bazaar, Elle, Oprah Magazine, Good Housekeeping, oh. Women's Day. The list is endless and glorious.
But it is endless and glorious, and you're in charge of all that content.
Well, the editors are technically themselves in charge. I'm there to help them succeed. It's a fun job.
It sounds like a really fun job. And I'm so honored you're here. And she also wrote the most perfect book for my audience, Love Rules, How to Find a Relationship in the Digital World. I also want to mention, though, that you're executive producer of The Bold Type on ABC's Freeform, a show that's inspired by your life as a magazine editor.
It is, and it's a really fun show. It starts again on June the 12th.
Congratulations on that.
What was really exciting was the social media coverage of it. People just really got into the show and then just started a drumbeat of when is season two? When is it happening? So Freeform are like, we're doing season two, we're doing season three. So we're very excited, and they're shooting as I speak in Montreal. In fact, I was just talking to Melora Hardin, who plays Jacqueline Carlisle, on the way here.
So it's kind of based on your life as a...
It's loosely based on my life. What I wanted it to be was an enthusiastic show about women in the workplace. So there's a great female boss. There are three female friends who support each other. They're not all tearing each other down. And my experience of women in the workplace has been largely incredibly positive. I've only had good female bosses. And I hated the idea that women in popular culture were always presented as beasts always presented as monsters in the office instead of actually helping each other.
You know, it's so true. We talk about that a lot around here too. You can see that I have a lot of women in the office, and I know that that's a thing, but I can't, the toxic energy of women being like that is just something that we don't, I would never accept her on here. Well, so I appreciate.
I think a lot of the male executives like the idea of women being at each other's throats and love the idea of toxic energy around women's friendships. But as women know, actually, it's those friendships that keep them going. But in my business, magazines and fashion, the trope has always been the Devil Wears Prada trope, that you have this monstrous boss and everybody else is sort of bullied. And it just wasn't my experience. The fashion world is actually not like that. And certainly my experience at Hearst at the magazines there has not been like
that. I love that. I loved you. You are setting the record straight because I think there's a lot of women who believe that.
Well, at least I'm trying to balance the record.
Exactly. And let's be honest. I mean, there's lots of different offices. There are lots of different scenarios. Okay, let's talk about your book because I love this book. How to Find a Relationship in a Digital World, Love Rules. And the reason is there's a lot of dating books out there, instructional books over the years, the rules, just telling women what they should do, what they shouldn't do. And what I love about your book is that it really asks women to go inside and kind of do some introspective work about who they are, what they want, their patterns in life, you know, so they can take inventory to kind of figure out before you go out there and start dating, which you still might go out there and date kind of randomly. That's part of the process, but also just to kind of take a look.
Well, what I think
inspired you.
Well, I think one of the things that's happened is that we no longer feel okay with solitude. And in solitude, that's the time you do the work thinking about yourself, right? And now we tend to fill every moment that we can, every gap. We immediately reach for our devices and start communicating with friends. And I think that if one took a lot of that energy or even half that energy and spent it thinking about where are you in your life? Is this where you want to be? What about writing it down and then tracking your patterns over the course of 3 months, 6 months, a year? You would actually end up in a place where you could nudge your life in the direction you want it to go in. And so many people sit around and discuss their lives with their friends repeatedly and relentlessly. And we all have friends who seem stuck and who want to replay the record every time you're talking to them. And I think this is a way of getting unstuck and finding new pathways to meet people. And I did it as a diet book for love because I thought that food and love have a lot in common. We have huge appetites for both. When you have a delicious meal, there is nothing better. Mm-hmm. And when you have a bad meal, it sucks. And we're all tempted by junk food, but you don't want a full diet of junk food. And similarly with love, you want a nutritious mixed diet over the long haul. You don't want to just have junk relationships and toxic relationships and hookups, which are absolutely fine. It's an incredibly non-judgmental book.
That's what I love, though. It is very non-judgmental.
Yeah, I don't mind.
Like, do your work.
You do what you want to do as long as that is what you want to do. Your nightmare is doing something that you're pretending you want to do when actually it's not making you happy. And then you keep on doing it. And I see that happening with people. And I talk to hundreds of people for this book.
So
hundreds
tell me,
of men
tell me
and women.
What you found. So I know a lot of that is in here, but was there anything that was, because after working 20 years in this industry, 20 years as a journalist, right? There were 20 years in the magazine. More than that.
A bit longer.
No, 20
than
years
that,
with you were at Cosmo and Marie Claire women's
magazines.
Yeah,
I was at Cosmo for 4 years, Marie Claire for 6 years.
Okay.
So 10 years in women's magazines.
Okay.
Yeah. And
10 years in women's magazines.
Yeah,
and
which is a long time.
Yeah, that is a long
time.
They're
like
all
dog
women.
Years.
No, literally, like really. I mean, that's, it's all sex, relationships, dating. So after all of that, where you really are immersed in women and dating and sex, was there anything you found that was surprising right now?
There were a lot of, great question, and there were a lot of things I found surprising, not least that 1 in 5 are on antidepressants. 1 in 5 said they'd been sexually assaulted. A lot of people felt they were drinking too much and didn't know how to stop. And the thing that most alarmed me was that people weren't having fun dating in the way that I would have expected, and nobody, and I talked to hundreds of women and some men over the years, nobody talks about falling in love anymore. They all talked about dating. Many of them were on dating apps. And many of them were finding success on dating apps in terms of meeting people, but it felt so much more transactional. And dating apps, and I'm a huge dating app fan. This is not an anti-digital book at all, but dating apps can't be the only solution. It can't be the only tool in your box, the only arrow right. in your quiver. You've still got to get from the digital bit to offline to have a relationship. It felt interchangeable. People felt that they were interchangeable. And a little bit like you would often match on someone, and I likened it also to virtual shopping, that you put it in your virtual basket and then you decide not to confirm purchase right. just yet.
Just feels good to shop.
Yeah, and it, that almost takes care of the urge, right?
Exactly,
I know
it
I'm
does.
On Net-a-Porter all the time.
Exactly.
Right, and I like, oh, I like that Gucci jacket. Oh, it's $6,000. Can't really afford it. Putting it in
put
the basket.
Put it in the cart, go back, right.
Right, and then the next day I'm like, remove item. Right. What was I thinking? And right. there's an element of that with dating
absolutely.
Apps.
Absolutely. You're just swiping, you're seeing who you match with, what feels good. I don't really want a date, but I want to know there's options.
Right. And you can't really, A, you can't tell from a profile and a photograph until you've at least talked to someone on the phone whether or not they're worth your time. And one of the other things that I noticed happening, and this is definitely, you know, something that's happened over the last 5 years to people, is that people spend an inordinate amount of time texting, flirty texts back and forth with people they do not know.
Right.
And it is not a way of getting to know people. You think it is, but actually what happens in a computer-mediated environment is that you end up filling in the gaps with positive attributes, and they may be wrong. So often, if you actually get to a situation where you've had, I don't know, 200, 500, 7,000 texts, and you meet the person in real life, you think you've fast-forwarded the awkward bits of getting to know someone, right. but you really haven't. No. You have to start at zero.
You have to see them too, the chemistry. Do you feel, how
of
do you
course.
Feel when you're actually in their presence?
Of course.
I totally agree with you. There's two things here that I want to go back to, because first of all, I agree, like, the second you meet someone and you match, stop the texting and let them know that you want to pick up the phone. Like, make a phone call, even FaceTime. Save yourself so much time. Like,
well, FaceTime is a brilliant idea yeah. because that tells you so much more.
So much more. But you're all about the phone call too, though. You're like, let's just nip it in the bud. Don't spend more than a day or two texting with someone or even a few lines. I'm like, if you're interested, let's talk. Let's figure out. Because then you can tell by listening to someone's voice or even FaceTime, if you know, seeing them and be like, okay, is this a connection? No. I mean, you don't have to get ready. You don't drive across town. It'll save you a lot of time. So I love that idea.
Well, and also in the book, I talk about emotional calories. Where do you want to spend your emotional calories? A calorie is a unit of energy. Where is your emotional energy going? Why do you want to spend it texting with someone and getting your hopes up that this is a really good connection without making the effort of the phone call? I know that most people would rather at this point shoot themselves in the face than have to pick up the phone.
Right.
But it's a surefire way of figuring out, is this person worth your calories?
Exactly. I love it. You say it. You need to take an emotional calorie account. So we can also talk about that in a minute. But the thing I want to go back to is, why do you think, what's your reasoning why women are not talking about falling in love? You
I
said that was
think that what's happening now is that people have sex with people often on the first date to figure out whether or not they like them, instead of getting to know them and then having sex be part of the goal. Now, again, no judgments, but it's exhausting and it's hard to have good sex with people you don't know. And a lot of the time I talk to people who said, listen, we're drinking too much. We know we're drinking too much. But it's really hard to get naked with a stranger when you've just met them. Of course, we're drinking too much. And then the next morning, they would often wake up with remorse and feel bad about themselves right. and have what I call an emotional hangover as well as a physical hangover.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to sort of call BS on that and say, this is not sustainable in the long haul. Mm-hmm. And it is really like going out with a big appetite on Friday night and eating 3 Big Macs in a row, and you just think, why did I do that? I feel like crap.
It's true. You wake up with like a shame over. That's what
a
I call
shame
it.
Over.
Yeah,
brilliant.
You can use that.
Phrase.
I think it is. It
yeah.
really is.
A
Women
shame
have
over.
To check themselves. Like, if you have to numb yourself to actually have sex and go out with alcohol, and then you feel really bad about it the next day or next few times it happens, and you kind of know something about yourself. And I love that your book gently guides people, and it's not like you have to be journaling. You know, you could do it on your computer, or I like writing things down, but these questions are so, it just gets you to think like, did I have pleasurable sex last time? Did I have an orgasm? Was it satisfying for me? How did I feel in the morning? And then you could really stop and go, is there a pattern here?
Well, only 11% of women say they have an orgasm on a hookup.
Right.
So then why are you having the hookup? And are you probably having the hookup because you want some intimacy? You want to be cuddled? You want some action? Again, absolutely zero judgment. As long as you're getting what you want and knowing that you're going into a situation where it's hard to do that. It's hard to have good sex with a stranger.
Really hard, yeah.
And it's hard to have good drunk sex. So one of my questions to people is, have you ever had sex sober? Is this someone that can pass the sober sex test? And I spoke to a lot of people who hadn't.
They'd never had. Yeah, I've heard that too. A lot of friends, especially friends who've gotten sober, they're like, oh yeah, no, it's so hard for them to start having sex again because they literally have never had sober sex because we feel like, you know, the social lubricant to even kiss someone. And now I just think it's gotten out of control on college campuses and
everywhere. There's so much binge drinking. And I talk to a lot of academics and college presidents and they're all really alarmed about it. And it is true that it's on the rise. I know that, you know, it's easy for journalists to be alarmists, but this really is a frightening pattern. And actually it used to be that beer was the top five drinks in America. It would be different brands of beer. And now beer is still the number one drink in America, but numbers 2, 3, 4, and 5 are all hard liquor. And it's hard liquor hidden in soft fruit drinks.
Right.
So it's hard lemonade, it's popsicles. And so it's very easy to get drunker than you expect.
Right.
And in the book, of course I don't say give up drinking. I love champagne. I love wine. I get that it's confidence in a glass. But I say respect your limits. Don't go out of your sort of range. And also the minute you do, when you're drinking with someone you don't know, your red flags that would normally be waving stop waving, right. And they get blunted. The sort of
it's
draft
true, your
on
inhibitions,
them,
exactly.
Right, the draft on them dies and they're not waving when they should be.
Right, exactly. And it's funny because it's alcohol does that. You lower your inhibitions, you make choices you wouldn't normally make. And then also, when you have sex too soon, a lot of times for women, we get attached to the love hormones and then we can't see the red flags waving in the distance because we're so attached to sex with this person. And so I think it's just best to like slow things down. Meet for lunch if you're like, no, I have to drink on a date. I say have a lunch date then if you need to, if you can't get drunk or
go for a walk in the park or do something. It. Go to summer, the theater, do a wine, maybe not a wine tasting course, but do a cookery, class. Do something together that you have something to talk about. So the stress and the pressure is off the date. You're not staring at each other frantically thinking, God, do I find this person attractive? You're actually doing something. So even if you don't like them at the end of the evening, it hasn't been an entire waste of time.
Exactly.
You've learned how to cook a lasagna.
Exactly, right. Right, which actually, I have not yet learned how to cook. Maybe I should do that. It's not a bad idea.
That helps,
exactly.
Right?
And I love how you use food as the analogy throughout the book. And so also one of your quotes here is, pleasure is the fundamental calorie you want to be consuming. And I just agree with you. I'm like reading your book going, yes, I totally agree with you that women we're not taught about pleasure. We know that sex education is abysmal and that to even get women, and I love the provocativeness of how provocative some of your questions are around that. Like, think about it. Did you have pleasure? How did it make you feel? Just having women look at themselves. So why do you think that it is that women don't even know how to prioritize their pleasure? And I don't know, how can we get them to do that?
Well, one of the things that I heard repeatedly from women was that they felt they were competing with porn and that men expected them to behave like porn stars. And we know that there's so much porn in the culture now. It's readily available on every television screen, on every computer, on every device. And again, I'm not anti-porn. I'm anti-porn as default sex education. And of course, porn is shot from the point of view of the cameraman.
Right.
So there are all sorts of camera angles that work in porn that don't work in real life. And what I heard repeatedly from women was men would start foreplay with sort of cliched lines from porn,
right,
and expect them to give the cliched lines back, and then wanted them to behave like porn stars and look like porn stars. And they don't want to do that. They want to have sex that feels more original and fresh. And if you're trying to perform like you think sex is supposed to be done, it makes it much harder in the moment. And I think women are used to servicing men and sex has always revolved around the male orgasm.
But that's what, exactly. So, I mean, I think you're totally right. And I hear from men too who are like, well, I was with her and she was acting like a porn star and it didn't really seem like it was real and it was a real reaction. So I kind of hear it both ways. And I agree that there's nothing, not bashing porn, but not a great place to be learning specifically how to have sex. It's not going to be a tutorial on how sex should happen. It's true. We prioritize men's pleasure. We think that we say yes to things that don't really feel good. We're not really in touch with our bodies. We don't even know what we want. So going back to the first thing, that women won't really admit they want love if they do. They won't really admit what they want in bed if they know. So they're just putting on these acts. And I feel like I was going to ask if you feel like that it's gotten more severe over the years, like over the last 10 years, say that you've worked in, I've been doing this for like, I don't know how long we did this, 13 years. I do think that porn has been a huge factor in all of this, but I also think that since I can remember women just, again, it's all set up for men, and I just want women to like masturbate, take time for themselves, figure out your body and just feel comfortable. We've had success in so many other places, like in the workplace and everywhere else we have these freedoms, but with sex, we still have this, like it's not okay to ask for what we want. It's not okay to have pleasure.
It's very interesting because in the culture, we're still very uncomfortable with the idea of ambitious women, right? And I think we're still really uncomfortable with the idea of women who have sex drives. And so it's all sort of hidden and it's sublimated. And in fact, the culture we live in doesn't really like women having desire for anything. They want us to be consumers, which we are frantically, but it's hard for our culture to admit that women have needs and wants other than for children. And weirdly in the book, I address, or perhaps not weirdly in the book, but weirdly one of the things that I heard when I was talking to a lot of young women was their ambivalence around having children. They didn't dare say it out loud because they felt it sounded retro. And
it sounded retro?
Yeah, to want children or to want to have a partner and have kids.
Well, that's what I was trying to get at. Okay, yeah, keep going with this because you were saying that they didn't want to admit they wanted love and you're saying they don't even want to admit they want children and families because it's not cool?
Because it makes them sound... Well, I think it makes them feel like they're trying to hark after some 1950s archetype, which they're not. And we know that fewer women are having children now than they were. And that's partly because contraception is so good and it's widely available and although not always. But I think that women are concerned... And again, we have another dialogue around women's careers than we do with men's careers, that you can't have a job and have kids and do both well. And so as a result, a lot of women say, well, you know, I'm just going to focus my efforts around work. And I have a whole chapter about you need to choose your own best before date. Again, playing off the food.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Analogy. But this is something you really need to think about because you do not want to wake up at 45 having decided that you've been in denial about wanting children and now you do because the odds are stacked against you being able to have them.
Right.
And of course, it's difficult to have a child on your own. I'm not pretending it's not. But if you know you want a child, you need to address it because you do have a finite window in which you can do this. And the fertility industries have told us that it's all possible. But again, the odds are against you. It's expensive and it's not great for your health. And again, if you're in a relationship and you don't feel you can raise the fact you want kids, you're probably in the wrong relationship.
Yeah.
And this is a really, really important thing in women's lives. And I feel like we've made it sound like, oh, it's impossible to have a job. It's impossible to have a child at the same time. I'm not saying it's easy. It's absolutely not easy. But if you want to have a child, don't not have a child because of a job.
Exactly. No, I absolutely agree with you. And like you can freeze your eggs now, which a lot of people are doing.
You can freeze your eggs. And you should freeze your eggs when you're younger because freezing your eggs at 38, again, the odds are against you.
Right, right. You can freeze your eggs. And I feel like the concerns that a lot of women have, like, oh, I could never say that. I could never let my partner know that I want kids or that I want to continue to work and have kids or that I want you to touch me this way to have an orgasm. Whatever it is, we don't feel that it's okay to ask for it. And I just want to say, if this is striking a chord with any woman here or a man, like, there's no time like the present. And I would say that tonight, go home and ask for that thing because don't waste your time another minute in a relationship where you don't feel like you're saying something that you're holding back from having life that you want.
And if you can't say it and you can't ask for it, then there's A, you've got problems with communication. And listen, communication in relationships goes up and down, right? There are times when you want to hear someone, there are times when you don't want to listen, and vice versa with your partner. But you may be in the wrong relationship if you can't at least voice what you want. Now, you don't always want what each other wants at the same time either. Relationships have ebbs and flows. One person wants one something. But something like kids is fundamental. I'm not suggesting you raise it on the first date. But if you know you want them at a certain point, you do want to, because your nightmare is that the person turns around and says, I don't want kids with you. And then it turns out that they go on to have kids with someone else. You need to get out of that relationship and find someone who needs kids too.
Exactly. And I mean that, of course, not that you just had this thought, but if there's something that you've been sitting on for a while and your friends are urging you, like, I'm just saying it's a time to do it. Like, there's no... People sit on so many things in relationships. They don't communicate clearly and then they don't get what they want. And women wake up and they're 45 and they don't have kids.
Now, I don't want to say that you have to have kids, but I just want you to be able to ask yourself. And I'm glad that you think the questions are provocative, because I thought really hard about is this going to piss people off? But I want people to engage in the really important things in their lives.
Right. No, I love these questions. I was actually going to get into it. So we will get into some of them, but we're going to do an Instagram Live. Hi, I'm here with Joanna Coles and her book. We're talking about her book, Love Rules, How to Find a Real Relationship in the Digital World. And I love talking to you about your book because really, you guys, how do you find a relationship in the digital world? We've got some good tips for you here. This book asks you really important questions as a woman, like what do you really want? Why are you sleeping with that person over and over again if it doesn't make you feel good? And what kind of person are you really looking for? So if you guys have any questions, ask us.
We'll answer questions about anything.
Okay, so some of these questions do have women think about. I mean, I started thinking about it. So do you always fall for the guy who ignores you?
So many people do that.
Right? They're like, it makes me feel, and I think we're going to be answering some emails from listeners in a bit. And this comes up a lot. There's one that says, I only like the guys who don't like me. Or why is it the guys I like don't like me? And it's like this thing.
Well, then you have to go into an elaborate tap dance to get their attention. I mean, sometimes it's a pose and they do like you and they're doing it because they are shy to put themselves out there. But so often, I think that it's part of the Cinderella complex that we've grown up with, these princes and, you know, the sort of sense that these ridiculous things that women are supposed to do to find the love of their life. The idea that you have to kiss all these frogs is such a ridiculous trope.
Exactly.
Why should you have to kiss 30 frogs?
You don't have to kiss 30. But this
someone.
Is what I love about your book, because cut to the chase, like maybe kiss 10 frogs and then you're not, then you know what characteristics
you're. Hopefully you don't kiss any frogs. Hopefully you kiss some other princes.
Right,
and maybe a couple
right
of
to
princesses
the princes?
Too.
Don't you have to kind of kiss a few frogs so then you appreciate the princes?
Well,
a few frogs.
Well, maybe,
the way.
But I don't think they all have to be frogs.
What's in the middle here? Right. They're just, I don't know. They're the lizards.
Could we have a couple of koala bears in there?
Yes, I would like a koala bear. And then what are the characteristics you feel you need in a partner? I love the idea of writing down what your non-negotiables are. Like, I want someone who's enthusiastic about their job, loves their mother, likes the outdoors. And then, you know, if you're dating someone who just sits home, plays video games all day, hates their family, hates life, is negative, you can go back to this checklist. I mean, there's so much more than a list in here, but there's just, it's really
introspective. And also sort of values, like, you know, what are their sexual values? Do you want honesty? Do you want reliability? Do you want someone who's responsible? Do you want someone who's kind? Do you want a grown up? Do you want a child? I mean, not literally a child, but do you want Peter Pan, or do you want actually a sort of grown up?
Right. And if you keep dating the Peter Pan types, you might notice in here it asks you that. It kind of leads you to your own conclusions that, oh, I have been dating a lot of guys who haven't been available lately. It's not me. Because I think we're talking a lot about how women, I think, we blame ourselves for a lot of things. We think that we sort of have to please our partners. We kind of put other people's needs before our own. And I love that your book, Love Rules, has women really look at what they want. And like, that's okay. And giving women permission to ask for what they want, to live a life and to kind of shape their life around like going after what they want and not wasting time with a lot of the frogs.
Well, and I think you have a much more interesting, much more nuanced relationship if you can be honest about what you want.
Best ways to meet people offline. Love that question.
I think that's about being really present in the moment, not always having your phone with you. And it's everything from when you're in a coffee shop asking someone, you know, when you look at a line in a coffee shop now, everybody's on their phone. If you turn to the person next to you and say, oh, which do you think is better, the blueberry scone or the maple scone, you can start a conversation. Even if they don't look promising, they may have a brother who's promising, they may have a best friend who's promising, you just don't know. And if you don't have those serendipity little moments in the day, you know, A, you're much less rich for it, but there's so much potential hiding in plain sight if you can put your phone down. I'm a huge believer in joining things, a church choir, a theatre group, a sports team, because it's fun doing things with other people, not just sitting around and talking with your friends.
Right.
And if you think about how life was at college, usually people are members of clubs, you have teams, you know, you have groups of people.
Community.
You have community. And what happens when you go into the workplace is you start a job and then in the evening you see your friends, you go out for drinks or whatever, but you don't have that same sense of community. And I think it's super helpful to join one or two things. You don't have to become a lifelong member, but think of it in terms of, I might do this for 3 months or 6 months and see if I like these people. And don't be looking for the one because that's too much pressure.
Well, I was going to tell you say that in your book, and I totally agree with you. That whole, like, we have to find the one.
Oh, it's nonsense.
A lot of pressure. I don't even believe that that exists. I mean, you might find one person you want to be with for a long time, and you might say it's forever, but just to think that they have to have everything and check all the boxes, I just don't think that that's realistic.
Yeah, I agree. And that's also the sort of, again, goes back to the Cinderella complex that we've all grown up with, that somehow you'll find one person that, to your point, can solve all the problems. There are many the ones. But what you're looking for is people you can add to your social network, your real life social network, to give you a bigger life.
Yeah.
They bring friends with them. You extend your network of people. And the goal here is to have a bigger life. You will meet more people. And then if you want to find someone to settle down with, you will. And it will be a much more natural process than frantically swiping right, left to...
I totally agree with you.
You know, to see if you can find somebody.
I love what you're saying about put the phone down. And because I notice that wherever I go now, it's like, it used to be that you would meet people in line, walking to a store. You could be walking through a parking lot, but literally everyone's on their phones all the time. There is none of that eye contact, even checking people out. There's nothing like that because we are completely cut off.
And I think the thing is, it's not zero sum. We're not saying you have to put your device down.
Don't leave it at home. I understand. You need ways.
Of course not. And I love being on my phone. But I don't want to be on my phone 24/7 and miss what's actually happening out there.
Right, because the person's probably walking right past you.
And I think there is a sense of panic. I know I feel it when I disconnect from my phone. If I switch the phone off or I put it down or I leave it in a bag, I have this kind of, you know, 60 seconds of full body roll of like, right, oh my God, I'm not connected with the world.
Right.
But then I get through it and then I'm talking to people and it's so much more fun.
Yeah, it feels amazing. I know. I agree. Okay, another question. Okay, so how do you break through to a partner who's always on the phone? Who feels closed off?
Well, they may be closed off because they don't want to talk to you about how they're feeling because it's not going well. And often I think when people say they don't want to talk about feelings, they mean they don't want to talk about feelings with you. So this might be a situation where the questioner has to be really frank and just say, I would love it if you could put your phone down. I've got a couple of things I'd love to talk to you about. Would you like a glass of wine? Let's have a chat. And if they can't put their phone down, then you might want to say, you know what? I think you and your phone have got a fantastic relationship. I'm so happy you've met. I'm out, leaving now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's hard to... it's hard to compete with phones. And I think I heard this from a lot of people. And we've all got to be more disciplined around our behavior with them.
I think we have to start setting some of our own restrictions. Like at night, I'm not going to be on the phone between 7 and 10 when I'm with my partner. But I think that it might be that they don't want to communicate with you. It might be also that a lot of people just don't have experience talking about feelings and emotions. So it could be the way that you're approaching it. Because if your partner has never talked about anything to anybody, that they don't want to talk about you, it's really scary for them. So I think baby steps. I'm not sure what it is that you actually really, what you're trying to get to with them. But I think getting out of the house, if you guys are going on a hike, I would say when you're on a road trip in the car, if you're just driving in the car, is a great time to conversations because no one's on the phone and you're not even really making eye contact, but it's still intimate. So you're looking ahead on the road. So that could be a great time as well. And not to do it in a, you never talk to me, your phone's always in the way, but just like, hey babe, I'd really love to connect with you. And I think like, let's talk about what's going on. It's important to me. It makes me feel like we're not really connected or you don't see me or whatever, but not blaming. And it might take a few times. I think a lot of people think they have a conversation once with a partner and everything should be great. It takes a few times sometimes to get our points across, maybe years.
And it may be that the person, I know when I'm intensely on my phone, it drives my husband crazy if we're driving somewhere and I'm on my phone and he's doing the driving because he wants to talk to me. And I may be doing work things on it. And there's an urgency around being on the phone that actually isn't always translatable to real life. And sometimes you do genuinely need to communicate. And other times you're like, you know what, just because someone's emailed me right now, I don't have to actually email them
back. There's also a decision, right? We're so reactive.
And I think the expectation that you have to be available 24/7 on your device is exhausting.
Can that be your next book? Because really, like, someone... Yes. There was no rules around this. Like, emails were stressful, but now I'm like, and there's no way to mark texts. I don't get back to texts. It's a whole thing. Like, when are you supposed to get back to someone? What do you guys all think? Okay, any more questions?
You're allowed to get back to someone when you want to get back to them. Their urgency isn't necessarily your urgency. Their crisis isn't your crisis.
I know. It's hard though.
It's hard to do.
Because
it's
I want to do it now because I won't remember to get back and then people get annoyed. Well, hey, I love you all. I might not get back to you. So how do you find balance in your life being a mom and a businesswoman and being in a relationship?
This is a very common question. And again, I think the dialogue around this is really unhelpful. There isn't any balance. I have no balance. As a person, I don't care about having balance. I'm just trying to catch all the balls before they hit the floor. And sometimes they do hit the floor. Some of them bounce right back up and some of them stay down there. You have to have other people, right? I have a super flexible partner. I have kids that have so far stayed out of jail. I have a lot of super supportive colleagues. And I will say this, and this is a message that doesn't get through to women. It's much easier to do this the more senior you become. You get more money, you get more support, and you can control your own schedule. And that makes a huge amount of difference.
Yeah.
When you're a junior person trying to keep your whole life together and you're at the mercy of a boss who wants everything on their schedule, mm-hmm. it is much, much harder.
That's true.
You're much better off being senior and being able to call the shots.
Right. And if you're not senior yet, I would say just the simple power of learning to say no. A lot of times things feel like everything's a crisis and you have to, well, I can't not go to my neighbor's barbecue tonight. And I told my friend I'd pick up her kit. No, like there are things that you can say no to. And it is such a great feeling when you just say no. Like no is a complete sentence. Oh, okay. We're going to take a quick break here. Give a shout out to our sponsors. Thank you, Joanna Coles, for being here. And we'll be right back.
I'm having another chocolate almond.
Please do. These are from Thrive Market. The other day, my friends at Adam and Eve called to ask me if I wanted to give away free vibrators to my audience. I said no. I'm kidding. Of course I said yes, but only for a very limited time when you use code Emily at adamandeve.com. They're going to send you a free pocket rocket with your order. Pocket rockets are great little vibrators. They're perfect for clitoral stimulation alone or with a partner. They're super easy to use and compact enough to stash anywhere. Oh, on top of the free pocket rocket, Adam and Eve will also chop 50% off the price of almost any single item and ship the whole order for free. To get in on this deal, just go to adamandeve.com and enter code Emily at checkout. I suggest you do it before they realize just how many of you are out there. Jamie, thanks for joining me for this important announcement.
I'm excited to be here for it.
Really excited.
Really though, like actually.
No, actually we're excited because we are here to talk to you about System Joe's Warm and Buzzy Clitoral Stimulant. And I thought for a great, you know, to really give you guys a review, we should do it in real time. So we just both put it on our clitorises, not together. I mean, separately.
Separately. But
it's warm and buzzy and feels good. I get it. It's warm. It's like, it feels so good.
No, it does. It's like, we're just sitting here, but we're just like, we've been going through this range of different emotions. We're just like, ooh, that's warm. Like, oh, there's a tingle. Like, ooh, there's a little buzzy and a tingle. Like it actually is like making me want to go home
and have sex.
No,
me too. I'm going to leave. I'm still going to leave. I wasn't feeling great. Now I'm really awake, but this warm and buzzy, it's kind of like foreplay for your clitoris. Like it gets me all turned on and warm and buzzy because there's 8,000 nerve endings. I don't know why a clitoral stimulant hasn't been made before. It makes so much sense. Maybe it has, but I never heard of it.
I've used warm and buzzy before actually with a toy and it gives that little extra oomph.
It really does.
Like extra vibrations. But the cool thing is that like System Joe has a range of different clitoral stimulants. So you can like have a cold one or a super cold one or a really hot one or one like just has the tingle, not like the different temperatures if you're too sensitive.
Yeah, you just want to tingle without the temperature. It's really good. You guys, this is like, this gets you ready. I always say you're so disconnected from your clitoris. A lot of us are disconnected from our vaginas. Use this and I'm so connected. I've never been so connected. I feel connected to yours as well. That's the power of it, Jamie.
I know, right? I feel like we just became like clit sisters. Well, anyways, but Emily, how can everyone else get this?
Do you want clit stimming gel? It's amazing, you guys. Okay, System Joe's stimulating formulas you can find at sexwithemily.com/joe. That's sexwithemily.com/JO. Okay, now we're back. I'm with Joanna Coles. Thank you for being here, Chief Content Officer of Hearst Magazines. And we're talking about her book, Love Rules. I want to talk a little about the expectations around women being asked to send naked photos, naked pictures, and feeling like a guy's not going to like him if they don't do that, and just the implications of that.
I've got news for everybody. There is plenty of naked flesh on the web. Between 30 and 60% of the web usage is spent on porn. If a man needs a picture, a naked picture urgently, he is not more than one click away from one. Do not, and I cannot stress this enough, do not send naked photos to someone unless you know and trust them 100%. The rise in revenge porn is horrifying. We just had a terrible story in New York of a teacher whose ex-boyfriend had plastered the school that she worked in with pictures of her naked. It sucks, revenge porn. It's really difficult to get back from.
It really is.
And the ease with which you can send naked photos is out of all proportion to what can happen when they're misused. And so I really, really urge people to think about it carefully. I know that probably we'll discover everybody's got naked pictures of themselves all over the web, but the misuse for them is massively on the increase. Yeah. And it's so distressing for people.
You're absolutely right. And I just want to say that in addition to that, even if you feel in the moment you can trust this person, we've been together, we're in love, I'm sure you are. In this moment, things are great. But I'm telling you, you send that photo, and I know this from my guy friends. The second they get a photo, they're like, hey, look what I got. Or, you know, or they send it along to someone else will see it. So just know that it's going to get into someone else's hands besides the person that you're intending to send it to. And this could really happen. People get upset. You break up with them. Things happen. I'm sure the teacher at the school never thought that that would happen from sending a naked photo.
Of course not.
You don't think. So there are implications. And also, be the one that doesn't. Be the one that says, I can't wait for you to see me in person. I can't wait for you to see my body in person. And I'll just have to wait for it. Because I do feel like there's some pressure from people too. They're like, well, he won't like me. He won't go out with me. So thank you for clarifying. I cannot say that enough on the show to encourage women to not do that.
Well, and value yourself. Don't put a naked photo out there. Though, you know, the temptation is strong.
It is. I get it. And I do feel like, yeah, there's that pressure.
I get it too. It's just know your limits, or figure out outfits that you look super sexy in, that you feel comfortable sending, that don't show the whole hurrah.
Exactly. You don't need to show the whole hurrah. I love the idea of your book about clearing out the toxic people, sort of like clearing out the bad food, don't eat the bad food, and the toxic people in your life. It could be ex-boyfriends. Could even be toxic friends. Talk about that process.
Yes. And again, I think this is where keeping a journal is really helpful, because it's worth jotting down the feelings you have when you have been out for drinks with people or hung out with people. And you will find there's probably one or two people that make you agitated or that make you a bit depressed. I remember when I was pregnant with my older son, there were several people who were super negative and just left me literally feeling like I cannot see this person. And I think it was I was trying to protect my unborn child from their negative energy. And I cannot stress enough the strength you will find in keeping your own data. Everybody's supposed to be a data analyst now. Data analytics, all about that. Keep data on yourself and your own behavior, and you will find out who pisses you off. You will find out the people that you end up pleasing. You will find out the people that make you nervous. You'll find out the people that make you feel slightly out of control. We all have those friends, right? I spent a year living with a friend who would get very drunk and pick up men and bring them back to the apartment. And it took me a long time to figure out that actually that made me incredibly uncomfortable. Right. I would be running around the apartment hiding everything that I thought was valuable because I was terrified by what would happen if it went wrong. Happily, it never did. But she was someone that actually, in the end, I probably shouldn't have been living with.
Right.
And so you want to figure out how these people impact you. And then, you know, if you really like them, but they do have a negative side, limit the amount of time you spend with them. This is like, you know, we all want to eat the fries or the donut or the really fattening churro. Right. But just limit it.
It's true. It's so true with those friends. I think that's something I've had to learn too, because you have those friends in your life, or the exes, or people that you just think, I mean, I'll say talk about friends, because I feel like a lot, this is just a great lesson for women, that there's the ones you're like, well, we've been friends since high school or college, and we had this thing together, and we have a history. But you realize as you get older, your values change, you get pregnant, you have kids, and you have this attachment, but you realize every time you're together, it just feels like they're draining the life out of you. And for women, again, I think we feel like it's not okay to cut relationships or to alter the way they don't have to be your everything anymore. Like maybe you see them once a year, like you have fries once a year, but they don't have to be like your best friends anymore. And it's also okay to cut people. It's okay to shed people from your life that aren't serving you.
Well,
being in touch with and accepting that it's, like you said, with your roommate, took a year maybe or a while to be like, something's not right here. But I just, again, having women trust their guts and saying, if it doesn't feel right, it's probably not.
Absolutely right. And you want a varied diet, and you want a varied diet of people, right? So it may be that you were at school with this person and maybe you were cheerleaders together, and that has a value, but over time the value fades. So there's no reason why you absolutely can't stay in each other's lives, but you just see each other less and you replace it with other people that give you more. And I think as you get older and you become more confident, it's okay to demand more of people that you do get a lot from and want to get a lot from, and you can give back to too. And also, who are the people that you feel you give to that you're not getting much back from? And track, do you feel tired after seeing this person? Do you feel energized? Do you feel enervated? And then figure out what it is about them that leaves you feeling like that.
Right. It's so true. You got to check in. I think that we just sometimes blindly stay in things for too long because we don't think we can get out. But again, just this is about getting in touch. Like your books, you know, get in touch with who you are, what you want, how you move through the world, what relationships are important to you and feel good to you. So I think that's great advice. So the other thing I liked was when you talked about get relationship role models. So which relationships, if you're like thinking, because I don't know that I would have known this, like my parents are divorced. I didn't have a lot of great marriages to look at as a child, you know, when I started dating, but to really look at, even if it's a relationship on TV or your aunt and uncle or your neighbors, like what looks like a happy relationship to you? What looks like a relationship that you'd like to be in?
Well, and you can also have parents that were divorced who are still good role models. I mean, they may have had a successful divorce. They may have gone on to different relationships. I wouldn't say that divorce itself is
true,
a bad
but for
thing.
Me, right. For me, it wasn't a great model when I was younger. Now my mom's remarried, happy 30 years. But I'm saying at the time it was like, oh, marriage is going to be a disaster. But it's okay to look outside. If your parents didn't or you don't think that that's right, there's other places to look.
Of course. And I mean, sometimes it's the parents of friends. And again, it's about what is the energy around these people? How do you feel? I think one of the most important things is to think about how do you feel when you are with this person, when you are with these people? Do you have an aunt and uncle that make you feel good? Do they support each other? Do they set each other up for success in a conversation? It could be friends you have. It could be siblings. I often think that, you know, we all had when we were growing up someone's house that you really enjoyed going to. And if they said, hey, why don't you stay for supper? There's 30 of us tonight, whatever. You were always excited to be invited.
Right.
So how do you recreate that energy? What was at the heart of that energy? And when are you at your best? Are you, you know, who are the people that you feel really confident and happy and fun around? And often they're the people that could be your relationship role models. So they don't have to be glamorous. They don't have to be good looking. They have to be kind. They have to be nice to each other. And then ask them, you know, ask them how they got through the down times, how they got through bankruptcy or illness or the bad times. Did they ever think of getting divorced? How did
questions.
They patch up, right? And we don't
get curious.
Tend to ask
we don't.
Each other about
no,
this
we
stuff,
don't. You're right.
Right.
Get curious about people around you and become the thing that I love about, again, and we're going to go to emails. You'll help me answer some emails from listeners. But what I love about your book, it's saying like, don't assume that you are an expert in relationships because you're not. We just assume that it should be going back to Cinderella, a magical fairy tale where relationships are easy. It works out. Sex should always be great. I'm going to work on my job, my health, my spirituality, and not relationships. And what I love about this, your book, is that it's really a roadmap to kind of like really focus on. It gives you great tools and a fun way to kind of figure out, who am I? What do I want in the world? So I'm not wasting time and I'm getting curious about the world around me and I'm paying attention to my own body, my gut, how I react to things and what makes me feel good. So
and I, well, I'm thank you. And also, I think about what it would be like to date you, right? I mean, do you listen? Do you talk incessantly about yourself? Are you interested in other people? What do you bring to the table that someone else is going to want to enjoy? And I think that's a question that women, oddly, given how much we think about servicing men, don't actually ask.
Right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, ask if do you have something in here about when you're writing your profile, have your friends, like, right? A few people around you, ask them if they,
right.
What they
ask,
think.
Yeah, exactly.
I
ask friends about your good qualities because you can't always, you know, sometimes you're shy about saying them. And if three or four people say, oh my God, you're brilliant or you're super funny or you're very smart, then you can, you know, wrap some lines around that so that you're presenting a good sense of yourself.
Yeah, I love that. There's a lot of great tips in your book, so everyone should check it out. Love Rules, Joanna Coles. We'll have all this information on our site. So we're going to head into emails from our listeners.
Good.
I love hearing from you. Joanna's going to introduce the email portion of the show.
Okay, so now we're on to emails. And if you have a question that you'd like Emily or me to answer on the show, we love that. And we've made it super easy to ask us a question. Use the option that's easiest for you. So you can text, save this in your phone right now. Just text, ask Emily, all one word, to 797979. You'll receive a short form where you can enter your question and contact details. If you'd like Emily to call you during a future caller show, please indicate yes on the form. Talking to you about your question is one of Emily's most favorite things. I know that because she said that the first time I came in.
I love it. It's true. Okay. Include your gender, your age, where you live, and how you listen to the show. Here we go. This is from Elizabeth. Thank you very much. I love the accent. Love how you did it. You can't even help it. I know. You love the accent. This is from Elizabeth. She's 22 in Philadelphia. Hi, Emily. I'm a huge fan of your show and I love everything about it. I'm a very sex positive person and I'm pursuing a career in women's health. So I love all the good, empowering information you're sharing with your listeners. I'm 22 years old, living and studying in Philadelphia. I'm on some dating apps, but I feel I'm not having any success. I talk to guys for a little bit, but nothing ever really comes of it. I've gotten a couple dates, but haven't really met anyone I've connected with. I've had a few boys in my life. Never a boyfriend, which is what I'm currently looking for. How should I go about trying to meet someone? Am I a lost cause? Is she a lost cause because she's 23 and she hasn't had success with guys? So I think I hear this from a lot of young women that are like, what am I doing wrong? And why haven't I figured out yet? And you can't just say, I mean, I want to say a lot of times you're just 23, like figure it out. This is part of the journey and not to have so much pressure on yourself. So I am going to say that to you, Elizabeth. And I would say that the process of learning to date is part of it. And also guys are just as nervous as you are and they don't have all the answers. What would you say to her? Like nothing comes of it. Haven't you? And I'm sure you've heard this from a lot of women. They say, I'm trying, I'm doing everything. There's no guys out there. And I just think you have to, I mean, I would say date online, but also be out in the world. Practice talking to people. Because I think when you have a really full, rich, open life, like you talked about, joining clubs or having a large community, you can't help but meet people. So if you're just relying on the dating apps and nothing else, you're studying, you're working hard, like you probably won't find someone
right away.
And you know,
it's a bit like having a meal and only having beans. You need to have all of it. So absolutely use dating apps. It's a numbers game. The more you use them, you will eventually be successful. But you want a big life, join things, get involved, and stop focusing on finding a boyfriend and start focusing on having more fun, enjoying yourself. You will put out positive energy. Of course, you're not a lost cause. Start a journal so you're tracking your own behavior and look at the kind of people that you're swiping on dating apps. Is there a pattern? Are you repeating something that isn't working for you? Because the guys that you are actually going out with aren't the ones that you're having any connection with. Right. So is there something that you're looking for that they all have in common? Sit down, go through their profiles, figure out what it was you thought was attractive about them, which turned out not to work for you in real life, and do a bit of research, you know, do a bit of due diligence on what's happening here. And also the other thing that I think is very common and people forget about is there are probably all sorts of people hiding in plain sight. Mm-hmm. It may be a guy sitting in your lecture theatre. It could be someone you're, you know, rooming with or one of their best friends. So look around at your circle and figure out the people that you like, because if you go out for a drink with someone you just like, they'll like you back for the most part, and like often leads to love.
Right.
So I think be positive. It sounds like actually you're in a fantastic place to find love. You're open for mm-hmm. it, and just make your life bigger. Don't focus on finding the one. Focus on having more fun and start taking
such
notes.
Great advice. Like I almost think it could be the title for the show. Like, don't focus on having more fun. Because I think that we are so hard on ourselves. Like, we got to date. Like, maybe if she's a student in her spare time, she's like, I got to date. But no, have fun. Go out. That's fine.
And if you're out with a group of friends and you're looking around the group and there's no one there that really excites you, who cares? Give as much energy as you've got to everybody else. And
totally
they all
agree.
Have friends. Right. They all have relations and cousins and brothers. You
That's
know,
true. That's
life,
how I've met.
Life is big. The world is stuffed full of people. Of
so
course
many
you're going to find someone.
You will. You absolutely will. Okay, this is from Emily, age 20, Wisconsin. Hi, Emily. I'm from Minneapolis. Going to college in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, basically the middle of nowhere. I have a petite frame and I'm severely lacking in the boobs butt department. Living in the cities was great because there were so many more people who were open to my body type and appearance. I have purplish hair, lots of tattoos and piercings. Young men here definitely prefer a more natural appearance and a fuller body type. However, I recently started seeing someone from school that I really vibe with, and the sex is great. I can't help but still feel a little self-conscious because he tends to avoid touching my boobs and butt. He also seems mostly interested in just sex whenever we hang out. We end up in his bedroom. He says I'm attractive, but his actions don't back that up. How could I work through feeling less than adequate in an environment that makes me feel out of place? How do I know he's not just using me for sex? Thank you for your help, M. You rock. So when I read this, I'm like, oh, Emily, you're projecting your insecurities around who you are and your differences, which I think are beautiful. How great to stick out in this place where everyone seems the same, that's maybe why he doesn't like you or he's not touching your bed. So these are stories that are not true. Emily, I'm going to tell you that I don't believe that this is what everyone's not thinking what you're thinking. I'm sure he's into you and he likes you. He's also a 20-year-old boy. So if it feels like he just wants sex, there's testosterone running through his body. He probably is more interested in sex than having just conversations with you right now. That is true. So you can let him know that you are interested in more than just sex. You can let him know, or invite him. I don't have to say that. You could say, let's go to a movie tonight. Let's go to dinner. Let's go to a concert. Like, you could kind of take control of it if that's what you feel like.
Yeah, and also if you want him to touch your boobs and your butt, then you just have to put his hands there and you have to tell him that this is what you would like and this is what would excite you, and that would be more fun for him too, because I'm sure he doesn't want to think that he's going to bed with you and you're not having a good time.
Right.
And good sex is about good communication. It often gets better and better the longer you've known somebody. It sounds like you need to do a little bit more talking and a little more doing things together which don't just revolve around sex.
Right, exactly. Great advice. I think you're so right. Communication is a lubrication. Okay, this is Brian, age 41, Ontario. Hi, Emily. Thanks for always giving great advice over the years, from an avid listener. I'm 41 and met a 21-year-old girl at an after-hours business event. We hit it off, I invited her out for drinks, and we ended up having sex. The sex and conversation was great. I touched base a week later to see if she wanted to have lunch, which she said she would love to. Well, our schedules have not connected, and she's a very busy girl. She's in med school 5 days a week and works on the weekends. We have a few how are you texts, and we're finally able to connect our schedules after 2 months. What was supposed to be a quick breakfast, that turned into a 3-hour breakfast with great conversation. I dropped her off. We hugged, shared a kiss goodbye. Right after, she texted me, thanks again. That was nice. I told her I had a great time and let's not go 2 months without seeing each other again. She said definitely, and that was 2 days ago. What's the next step? How long should I wait before contacting her? I think she's genuinely interested, but if she can't really find time for another 2 months, then I'm out. So there's a few things going on here. I mean, you're 41, she's 21, she's in medical school. She's beyond busy. Like, she's beyond busy what you could even imagine right now. So I feel like, I mean, there's great detail in here about what, you know, you had a great time together and it's going to be 2 months. And I'm not sure what you're looking for exactly here, Brian, but she does just seems unavailable right now. And I also think, though, if there's no, like, I don't believe in games. So you're saying, how long should I wait? I mean, text her right now. Ask her, say, I had a really nice time with you. I'd like to see you again. Let's go out, give her some options to go out again and see what happens. So I think that she probably just is really busy. Sometimes that's the case. And there's a 20-year difference and she's going through medical school. So again, what are you looking for right now?
Yeah, and I think that's super sound advice, Emily. And I also think it's less about the age than it is about the stage. You're 41.
I love that quote.
You can use it.
I will.
I think it's, she's at the beginning of her life. You've got 20 years under your belt. I would say pick up the phone. This could be someone that you could have a daily phone call with. You're checking in on her life. She might like to have you checking in and saying, hey, how's it going? Are you sleep deprived? Anything I can do? Can you send her some soup? You know, if you want to stay involved with her. But you should be realistic. She's got 6 more years to go at medical school, probably. It's not going to ease up. And if actually what you're saying is you want a really strong girlfriend who's really going to be available to you, then she may not be the right person right now.
Right. I think that is such a good point, the stage, because you're right. Things do work out with a 20-year age difference. But yes, being in medical school is just and her age and where they're at, I mean, at this point in her life. And I love creating intimacy through phone call or even FaceTime right now. We have FaceTime, you guys. I mean, you could be that person for her, that support and talking. And it could really enhance intimacy. You could see if there was a real connection. Great advice, Joanna. Thank you so much. This was a blast.
Oh, my.
Thank you for being here.
Entire pleasure. I've had the best time. I wish people could see the office. Well, they can see it a little bit. We're surrounded by feathers and whips. It's very exciting.
It is a very exciting place.
Very exciting indeed.
Oh, I love it. Thank you for being here. It's at Joanna Coles on Instagram.
At Joanna Coles on Twitter, on Instagram.
And the book, How Do You Find a Real Relationship in the Digital World? In a Digital World, Love Rules. We'll have all the links.
Great. It's sold on Amazon and all good bookshops.
Okay, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. I love you all. Thank you to my amazing team. Thank you to Ken, Jenny, our volunteers, Shannon and Sarah, our production team, producer Jamie, EP Lark, and our engineer and editor, Michael. Thanks, everyone, for subscribing to the show, reviewing it. And I love you all. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com. I love when I run into listeners of the podcast in the real world. You always ask such great sex questions. And you also ask me, is the womanizer really that good? Or tell me more about the womanizer, which doesn't surprise me because it's still the top search term on sexwithemily.com. The good news is I could talk about the womanizer all day. I call it the clit whisperer because it seems to know exactly what I want. I didn't think they could top the womanizer to go, the one that's shaped like a lipstick, but guess what? They did. The latest womanizer is called the Starlet. It's got all the power of the original, but it's super tiny. It literally fits in the palm of your hand. The womanizer uses patented pleasure air technology to indirectly stimulate your clitoris with gentle suction and air pressure. It's so effective, some women have an orgasm in 60 seconds. If you haven't tried a womanizer, now is the time. There are a bunch of different models, but trust me, all of them are the sure thing. To order your womanizer Starlet, click on the womanizer banner on my site or find it at goodvibes.com/Emily.